Hey, Josh.
Hey, Nate. How are you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty good. Just had a whole bunch of snow here up in Canada, and we just won a hockey game against the United States last night. So life's pretty good. Feeling pretty good.
Nice. Nice. That's always a big rivalry, big deal. So congrats. Yep. I didn't watch. I wasn't aware.
I don't really watch much hockey either, but I've got a lot of family that loves hockey. So I get the updates by osmosis.
Classic Canadian.
Yeah, there you go. How are things with you?
Good, good. I know we've talked about the book in the past, but been working through this North Star metric and growth levers, that whole thing. That's been good. I mean, I think Micah, one of my, I would just say like kind of my business partner, more or less. Like he boils it down to one thing. He's like, in a good way, you know, sometimes when someone boils something down, it's sort of like flippant and you're like, more nuanced than that. It's not exactly that. But he's like, oh, this is like a prioritization framework. I'm like,
okay.
I never thought about it that way, but yes, yeah. Exactly. Like if we're doing this well, it is helping us figure out where our bottlenecks are, understand our system from a business perspective, and also making sure we're focused our resources on unblocking the bottlenecks. It's like simple. Mm-hmm. It's a system. It's just like, yeah. And when you think of things as simplistic as that, you're like, oh yeah, duh. Right. But yet, you know, on a day-to-day basis, how easy it is to get just pulled into other things, pulled into small things that can add up or are not ultimately going to move the big needle, the big problems, the big, let the flow of the river really come down, you know, so to speak. So it's been good. It's been good. I'm in one of those moments. I feel like my mindset is slowly shifting, right? Like sometimes there's like this slow shift is the more you, I will say it's sort of like when you go travel or you're around certain people and just kind of like you were saying by osmosis with the hockey, you just start to like, if you were to hang out with that family, all those family members directly all the time, would you just start watching more hockey, right? Like it's just, you start to feel your psyche change, like, so to speak, in a good way. Maybe the hockey isn't a good example, but for me, thinking about top level priorities, North Star metric, where are the growth levers, where are the bottlenecks types of things. It's like, every day I'm thinking about it, not just like putting it down and be like, okay, it's done. Now I'm back to my normal work. So anyway.
Yeah. That's the slog of like company building and maintenance though, isn't it? Like just trying to make sure you're still going in the right direction and having some sort of clarity on what is the right direction and like what is not. Cause I feel like that's the whole point of the North Star metric. It's like, you can very easily compare against and be like, is this the most important thing to work on? Yes or no, you know, and then you can move on.
Right, right. I mean, ultimately what it does, I think, the way the book is structured and everything, it actually has like jobs to be done interviews. It has like understanding customer parts. It has like mapping out your growth model. And ultimately, like where it gets into practice is like, it's essentially how growth teams operate, right? Like it's more of like, if the title should have been something else, it could have been like, how to build a growth team. But like, but it was interesting because it's sort of, that's the end operational cycles. There's all the stuff you have to do in terms of like building your model. And then once you have that model, then you're executing on it for like a year. And it's sort of like, okay. And some of these things, it's just sort of like you keep, this becomes like a operating system of sorts.
Yeah. Did you want to talk further about that? Or did you have another topic in mind for today? Because I have more questions on that vein if you want to talk about that.
We can. I know you had a topic too. So I thought we were going to get to that, but I know, you know, you asked how I was doing and
my mouth
opened and lots of stuff came out.
Well, maybe we could do the, maybe we could talk about the growth stuff for a sec. What would you define as a growth team? Cause like I've heard that term thrown around or whatever, but like, what would you say that really is?
So yeah, I feel like there's a lot of different terms. There's like the word growth marketing has been thrown out. I would say it's really, in its essence, is the, it's like we'll just say the growth function. So we won't necessarily say a team, because team, it, you could be the growth function. I am the growth function. And really what it is, it's multifaceted, right? Like usually multiple skill sets. And what you're doing is like, so once you have your model built, it's sort of like, okay, on a weekly basis, it's, you're doing these growth sprints, which involve coming up with ideas, but also not necessarily shooting down ideas. Like, you're going to always naturally gravitate towards the quick wins, like the, you know, potential high impact, but I can do them quickly type of things. One of the big things out of the book in general is like, don't just shuffle off the hard stuff and just be like, but also really look at, wow, if this one moved, it could make a massive impact. And actually, we should be focused on that, because if we win that game, all the other games become moot, right?
Like, right.
It gets you thinking about, like, if I'm tweaking copy on the web page, okay, what is this? Yes, that's easy. Mm-hmm. Yes, could it be impactful? But in the grand scheme of things, if I don't have enough people coming in the door, how am I need to focus on that part first. So the growth function overall is sort of, once you have that model, then you're sort of operating within those. So it's, you know, oftentimes it's, you know, you might have a marketer, you might have a developer, but again, for you, for example, you're all those things. So you are the growth function, right? Yeah. And for me, it's, I have maybe like 3 or 4 people involved. Now it might deploy out into other people and projects that are helping, but the operational cadence is, let's say, on a weekly basis, or for us, we're probably doing it on more of like a monthly basis, because we also, half of my time is still keeping lights on with certain parts of projects. Right. Other people are too. We're not 100%, I would say, focused on the growth side, because if we don't maintain the operational side of what's making our business work, like, it all falls apart. So it's sort of like in that same thing.
So is the reason for calling it growth, is that really just to try and break out of the incremental improvement mindset, where like you've got, you know, people analyzing customer feedback, people looking at, well, oh, if we add this button here, you know, that'll make people's life better, and really trying to get like, okay, well, what's the overall strategy? Like, how can we really move the needle? Is that kind of it?
Yes. I think it's two things. I think it's that, and also being agnostic to the skill sets required, right? Classical business is like, oh, you're a marketer, you're a developer, you're a product person, you're a, you know, whatever. And the reality is you need often all of those skill sets, you know, depending on the business. But so it's trying to kind of make sure you're focused on unlocking growth, right? Like, what are your true bottlenecks, and being creative in your thinking. It's like, man, this could be hard, but if I win this partnership game over here, like, that solves all these problems downstream. It's making sure you're like fairly evaluating ideas against the whole like model, so to speak.
That makes a lot of sense, because I think as the product matures, you immediately go into like incremental improvement mode, unless something is obviously not working somewhere. And so I think that makes a lot of sense why you'd have to call it something different, even if it's the same person, just to have like that hat to wear. Cool. Well, that's all I want to talk about growth stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Well, like I said, with the team stuff is harder, because when you're talking to different companies, like, everyone wants to put things in the box of a role and a department. And I think that's where the whole idea of having a growth team or a growth function kind of drew out. But in its earlier stages,
it's just all
the core everybody. People is the growth function until that other stuff happens. Right.
Yeah. So, or like features could be like kind of labeled as growth items versus like incremental improvement sort of items.
Right. But it also allows you to, I mean, in the true sense of like, if this is really the growth function, it has you evaluate who's on that team. Because let's say a business is up and running, but they already hired people. They hired a marketer, and marketing is a big piece of the growth funnel, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if they realize like what they really need is like a, or they really need like a, what'll really unlock growth, let's say, is like being a YouTuber, like example. But that initial marketer was not like a YouTuber. They were a newsletter writer and a copywriter, but they're not, they don't want to be on camera. They don't want to do all these things. And it makes you go like, okay, that's a hard thing. But if the biggest opportunity for us is to be like out on YouTube, Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have the right team, right? Like, and I don't have the right setup, and not being beholden to how you necessarily, but that's the mentality shift it starts to have you think about.
Very cool. Yeah. So I did want to ask, want to ask you about some problems that I've been having.
Okay.
So I've been doing customer research or trying to for some sort of new customer support software. And one of the things I've been doing to try, I've been just trying to talk to people, anybody that'll talk to me. And to kind of drive that, I've been doing a lot of LinkedIn cold outreach kind of stuff. So trying to, I first tried using their paid, like a navigator in mail kind of thing. That didn't really work. I did get one interview out of that, which was really great, but I kind of switched to like connecting with people and then following up with a message, like a personalized message, asking them to, like, you know, talk to me. And I'm just having a really hard go at it. Like, I think I've connected with over like 250 people and tried to pitch most of them on, you know, hey, would you be willing to talk to me? And yeah, like nobody. I've got a few people that I've, you know, engaged a little bit with the messaging, you know, like asking questions or kind of giving clarification or saying like, hey, I don't think I'm a really good fit for this or whatever. And I guess I'm kind of trying to figure out like, yeah, am I going down the right path with this way of trying to talk to people? Am I got the wrong message? Am I looking at this wrong? I don't know. Kind of where to go.
I mean, I'm not a cold outreach expert whatsoever, so I have not done any of it. So I can't really, I don't really have any advice that I like have practiced myself other than like, you know, what I've heard on podcasts or what I've read on the internet, so to speak. So I don't know, but my first gut also is just sort of like, I don't know, a couple of thoughts went in my brain. One is like, is there anyone out there you can pattern match for in terms of like that is even getting this audience talking to you, right? It's like part of the cold part, the hardest part of the cold things is no one knows you. So it's very like, you know, the percentage chances are like you're doing a lot, but you know, if you, from an inbound perspective, if you don't have any content or you don't have anything on your LinkedIn profile, I don't know what's even on your LinkedIn profile. So that those are big signals, right? So if someone saw your thing and they're checking out your profile and it's like software developer, like Blue Giraffe and all this, it's like, why do they want to talk? What is this? Like, I don't even know what's going on. Right. So like to act the role, like you kind of have to still have pieces of the puzzle that give you some sort of level of like trust. Right. And it's like, are you writing about, you know, like, you know, do you have content on there? So that's sort of like your, if you're doing LinkedIn, that's probably your best chance of being like a, your homepage, so to speak. Like how can they do research before they even respond? Right. And are people even looking at your profile? I don't know. I don't know if you have paid for pro or premium and you can like see who's looking. So you can actually even know if they're even looking. Right.
Yeah. So I did check that. There was like, there's a percentage of people that look, I think probably it's hard to tell because you don't know who has actually looked at your message and not. But there's, yeah, I think there's a small percentage of people that definitely do. And I did do some updates, especially to my tagline that shows like even in the message, it will show to just say like, you know, SaaS builder or something like that, as well as my programming. So like SaaS builder and engineer or something like that. Because I did notice once I changed that, my conversion rate did go up. And that's actually one of the fun things with this is I've been doing everything manually and tracking every time I change something. And that has been really helpful because there's been a few times where you can suddenly see a bump and you're like, okay, that was that.
Something's thing. Working, at least, you know, from a growth metrics perspective, you know.
Yes. Yeah. But I did see someone was talking about like doing, maybe trying to do more of the like ads and gift cards or giveaways kind of approach to get people to talk as more of like a, like people, I think they understand that. They're like, okay, you're giving me something and I'm talking to you. That's the trade.
Right.
Whereas right now I'm trying to kind of pitch them on like, well, like you have a say in the next software, like you can have an influence and like, you know, these sorts of things.
I think I was to say bribe, but I think paying them for their time is totally legitimate. I mean, it's very well known in the sort of like, you know, user research, like, you know, so I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I like that.
Yeah. And I did try offering people to pay them in the original couple messages or bunch of messages versions of message I had. And like people didn't really like that. They got kind of queasy about that. I don't know what the deal is with that, but
I wonder how you presented it, like in terms of in the current conversation, like anytime someone's connecting with someone, right? If you think about like yourself, yeah. you're like waiting for the ask. Like what does this person want? Do they want anything?
Yes. What do they want?
And it's almost better for you to put that up front because it's like, and if you are putting this story, which is like, hey, I'm building a SaaS, I'm doing research. I'd love to pay for your time just to pick your ear on these same things. It'll take 15 minutes. Like happy to just pay, you know, thank you for your time with a $25 mm-hmm. Amazon gift card. Like just, I know your time is important. Right. And it's sort of like meets them in this, like, that's all I'm expecting. You're not going to be sold. Like it's a very much like, I just have some questions. If you're willing to spend and help out a person like that wants to build some things and that's great. Make it transactional. It's okay.
Yeah. And actually I did find though, as I made the message simpler, like over time, I've slowly been refining the message. As I've made the message simpler, that seems to get a better response. And I think it was kind of the same I noticed with like other ads, like when I've done like display ads or whatever, it's like mm-hmm. the simpler the message and the more like with the ads, I did more emotions, but with like this stuff I've just done, here's what it is.
Reasonably direct with the thing. Like they know what they're going to get. It's not convoluted and you're not trying to be like, oh, if I can like, you want to feel like no one wants to be tricked, right? So.
No. Yeah. And everybody is like on their guard when they don't know who you are. But I guess another thing I've kind of thought about this too, though, is like, is this maybe just like something that people are not annoyed enough about, like, or people that they just don't think about this sort of thing? Like do people actually care about this, the customer support software that they use? Or are they just like, well, whatever, like, this is just what we have. Like, is the problem bad enough that people will actually talk about it? Do you know what I mean?
I guess first I ask like who. I mean people switch software. This is a massive industry. People mm-hmm. are in this software every day. There's got to be things they're annoyed at that bother them, right? Like now, is it enough for them to move? Maybe not, right? What's annoying, but yet what is like, you know, what is just, I just deal with it. Like it's fine. Mm-hmm. Like am I a decision maker? Am I not? Am I a day-to-day user? Who's the one that has this power, or are you talking to the right person that would even like care about these features and functionality, that type of thing?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just kind of like feeling, and I always get this way when I do like cold outreach, I've done it before. It just feels like there's like nothing down the tunnel, or maybe there's just like breadcrumbs maybe, but I think I just have to find a couple of those first. Because like when I had that first interview, that was really great to kind of get that person's feedback, but they also weren't really like a deep thinker in terms of like how, you know, how do the systems work or how would I like it to be better or anything like that. So maybe I just have to keep searching.
Yeah, I don't, and I'm sure you've done research with like Michelle's book in terms of like, you know, these types of interviews. I've never done them, like any of these like jobs to be done interviews or customer interviews. And we even talked about one of the other podcast episodes that I think we sent the links, right? The one about, I think he's a Google Ventures guy that had that whole like interview and customer research framework bullseye or something like that. Did you ever listen to that or get into that?
So I've done a bunch of customer interview, bunch of customer interviews myself. And I've also read Michelle's book and listened to a whole whack of podcasts on it. I feel very confident in like actually asking the questions to be able to understand the problems. Like that's literally my consulting job all the time. But I think it's more just, I'm just struggling to get people to actually talk to, who would be willing to talk to me. I think that's kind of the problem. And that's more of a sales cold outreach problem. And I feel like I do need to solve that at some level because, you know, once I build something, I need to find more of these people. And yes, I'll have, you know, some SEO because I'll have a website and all that. But like, I still need to be able to, you know, have some way to scratch and claw to find some more people to get started.
Right. Do you know of the, there's the guy that made Groove. There's a help desk software called Groove, Groove HQ, I believe.
Okay. All right. I'm Googling it.
Do you know of that?
I guess no, not. I don't know of that.
If you're Googling it. So it's, there's a little bit of a story backstory with there. So the guy's name is Alex Turnbull, I believe. Let's see, but so,
yeah, Alex
he's
Turnbull.
Sort of a, yeah, so he's sort of a, an OG bootstrapper. Okay. So like,
okay.
If you look him up, like he was one of these, he came up in the early days of when Buffer and Transparency and that sort of like, you know, remote culture, like, you know, when all the stuff Buffer started to get a lot of, I would say brand recognition in our circles and whatnot. So he came up in that era and he was, I think, I would say he's probably like one of the OG build in public people. So he did these like, watch, you know, join me for my journey as like, I make turn Groove into like a, you know, $50,000 a month business or $100,000 a month business or whatever. Like he had a blog. And this was so pre people getting popular on like social media. And he had this well-known blog that was like, basically he was sharing all his details about like all the different things he was doing. Right. So
yeah.
Like I said, OG build in public person. So he is now, what's funny is I've been on his newsletter forever and it like, he did that build in public stuff for quite some time. Maybe it was like, maybe a year or two and got kind of pretty popular. Like he had, there's all kinds of stories. I think that all of the posts are still on his website.
Okay.
And, but like at a certain point he kind of went quiet or it slowed down. It was not like he was doing other stuff or whatever, but he recently in the past, maybe year or so, like restarted it.
Okay.
And also, I think at some point his last year, like his company kind of got partially sold, but then recently he bought it back. So there's all kinds of other stuff going. And he was also in the midst of his first company being sold.
Mm-hmm.
He started a new company called Helply. So it's all in this customer service space. So, right, like it's help desk software. I think his whole thing, his point of view was, I forgot. I think it's mostly like, I know Help Scouts was like, people shouldn't be tickets or something like that, right? There's like these different philosophical approaches to like help desk software that people make. So I forgot what his was exactly, but
it looks like, he created it looks like it's mostly like small business kind of targeted.
Right. So he created Helply in between, and now I think he's working on both of them, but Helply was meant to be like AI help desk stuff too. So it's sort of same market, but like, you know, AI taking your knowledge bases and whatnot. And so he's on a good, he's really cranking out the content. He's a very good content person. He's on LinkedIn. He's now like most of his posts now are about like a bootstrap business versus a VC business. So, I mean, he might be attracting a lot of small, I don't know if it's just like he's writing what he knows and also what he's passionate about, or it's actually a strategy and whatnot, but it's interesting because he's in that space. He's does a lot of content. He's doing really well on social media now. I saw one like LinkedIn post that had maybe like 500 likes or something, or 500 likes, but it's he, and a year or so ago, he was like, I knew of him and I followed and I'm friends with him on LinkedIn, but like we've had a couple email interchanges, but have never like talked. I've actually asked him one time, I think I was like, do you ever do podcast thing? Like,
yeah.
So might be able to get him on a podcast, which,
could be
fun. But kind of he's played through that journey, but now he's also trying to sell his new software too. So it's like, I could forward you some of the more recent emails he's done, but anyway, it has me thinking, well, one, it's in the same subject matter. He's doing the same thing you are, except he's got an audience, or he's rebuilt an audience, or he has sort of a, all he lives and breathes is in that, you know, customer service and being a bootstrap business. space.
I wonder if part of their ability to be able to talk to people, and like I think of this with like Jason Cohen too, because that's kind of where I got onto this whole LinkedIn talk to people kind of way of doing it. I wonder if part of it is that they put out content, and so people know who they are to begin with. And then after people know who they are, that's when they're doing the outreach to try and be like, hey, you know, does whoever want to talk to me about this project or this idea kind of thing? And so then people, because they already know who you are and kind of have an idea of what bucket to put you in, are more willing to talk to you because they're like, well, I know what I'm getting into with this.
So yes, in terms of that's inbound, right? That's your whole body of work is your reputation, right? So whether they know you from one thing and they're open, and if you have a broad audience, like someone in your audience uses customer service software, right?
Right.
So I know we don't have the broadest audience, but anyone listening on our podcast, if you're in customer service, reach out to us, reach out to Nate. He'd love to talk to you. There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
So yes, but also cold still works somewhere, right? Like I'm not an expert at this. So there are people out there. It's a big enough problem. There's a big enough set of users that there are probably, you know, niches upon niches and segments upon segments of all these types of software, right? So like, and again, it goes back to like who you want to serve, right? So even saying customer service person is a pretty broad.
It's huge.
Set. So
yeah.
Do you have, I don't know if you're using the interviews to help you specify, or it might be easier for you to specify a certain type to do that you could more, you know, like, I don't know if it's like small business or whatever those types of things, right? Like something that you can go more targeted, right? Because that you feel passionate about, right? And I would say at this point, it's like, you don't need to do the whole, I would not make a roundabout way to like do a bunch of content to make yourself like seem like an authority. Cause the reality is like, you're still kind of hunting for different spaces, right? Customer service right now is, it's going to sound crappy, but your flavor of the month or flavor of the year to kind of audience of the year that you're interested in serving. Right. And I said, it's still a good thing. Cause I think you like to help and serve people. It's not disingenuous, but even in a smaller subset, what subsets do you see that are interesting to you?
Yeah. So there's actually a bunch of them. And I think doing this cold outreach has kind of helped with that, because as I'm searching through all these different people and trying to figure out how to personalize the message to them, you just see them, the different categories, right? And I think, you know, smaller businesses where they've got these smaller departments where it's like, you know, less than 20 people in a service department, and where it's not some big conglomerate, you know, it's not like, I think I would really like to serve like someone's in like the manufacturing or product, like physical products business, where they build, you know, some sort of highly technical product that they sell to customers and they have to support that, you know, and troubleshoot and whatever. Those kinds of people I think would be really cool to serve. I also know a bunch of people like that, so I kind of, you know what sort of bucket they fit into.
Have you talked to them?
So I have talked to them, but the ones that I know are very small departments, and some of them I've actually built custom software for to solve specific problems that they have. And I think that at least the ones that I know, some of the solutions we've built have been very opinionated to the way that they like to do things. And I'm not sure that that's generalizable or not.
Well, who else? What's the next level up of the, I like this core of starting there. Like, what's that next level up of bigger than that? Like, who are those types of people?
The bigger than that. So I don't follow like as in bigger companies or like as in like larger, bigger companies. I think they just turn, they
bigger
slowly
companies
turn into,
that fit this profile of like manufacturing type of, might be more technical in nature.
So they slowly kind of build up into like conglomerates. So like you start out with the smallest kind of sizes. You've got like a, you know, a warehouse somewhere where there's a bunch of people in kind of a factory sort of setting, and customer service is blended in with like product development, and they're right alongside the manufacturing facility. And then you think you kind of grow up in that to, you know, detached manufacturing from office work, and you kind of get a larger office team. And then you kind of get to like multiple locations.
We're saying, let's say this niche is customer service for manufacturing. Like, is anyone target that niche? Is there something specific in that from that you have like a unique insights, at least knowing some past customers like that you've built some of this custom software? Are there any trends within those, even if it's just small, like that is different opinionated versus like their load profiles are different? There's, it's more technical. So they actually have to, you know, search specs more than like, you know, or it's like, is it challenging? Yeah. Like what are their unique challenges in customer service?
Yeah, so I do like they do have a lot more communication with the engineering team, and a lot of that is private communication, and like a lot of their knowledge base stuff is private as well. And then a lot of it has to do with versions of products in the field. There's always a lot of different versions of the same product out there. I mean, they all have unique problems, whereas most like other businesses, it's like, you know, you have one version of something out there. Yeah, there's a bunch of different things I can think of off the top of my head for that.
Is that the area you're focusing on, or are you just like,
I'm just trying to get anybody to talk to me because I figure,
but that's, well, what if it's just, but like, if you think about this, cause you have advantages in here, like you know, these people already, how their stuff sort of works. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like if there was more stuff on your, you know, and here's the other question. Are those people on LinkedIn? Like you're using LinkedIn, but are those people even on LinkedIn? Like, to me, it just sounds like you're fishing for people to talk to you.
Yes.
Versus like having a spear going after something that is, sounds interesting and sounds like a niche. Cause even again, back to our initial thesis, like if you could find 10 of these customers to support, like, and they're paying $1,000 a month.
Yeah,
you're good. Like you're.
Yeah. And actually, that does make me think that there are other ways to connect with those type of people, like trade shows or something like that, are definitely.
And if you're going to make a business out of it, you need to know how to connect to these people, right? Like, aside from the cold outreach. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I guess maybe with the cold outreach, I was also kind of thinking that, you know, the low hanging fruit would kind of come to the surface because, you know, people would be more willing to talk if they have more problems or if they're, you know, more engaged, I guess. And that would kind of help me auto select for a niche that was, you know, had more problems or whatever.
Right. And also like, you know, so like if you were to, let's say I was a manufacturer and you were to come up to me and you're basically, hey, I'm Nate. I'm a software developer. And I built lots of different software. I've built, you know, at least like 5 or 6 of these for different types of manufacturers. Here's what I identify as like there's certain problems, and I've ended up building custom software because they couldn't find anything. Now, my goal is to try to build one so people don't have to build custom software anymore. Like, I don't know if have you already built a custom thing, or are you using some off the shelf thing that was really not built for you because you have to deal with versions, you have to talk to engineers, you have to, like, all the stuff you just talked about is sort of like, yeah, well, I'd love to talk to you. Like, it may not, you know, it's like Nate's goal is to make it so that other manufacturers, like, There is a support software for them, so they don't have to make custom ones anymore. And it's like, okay, right? And you talked about your other one where they're small, but they paid for custom software. So I'm sure if they could find an off-the-shelf one, even at that small size, and it could do at least even maybe half the stuff your bespoke stuff did, right? If they're going custom, then of course I'm going to make it like super bespoke to me. But if it really just had a point of view and a way of thinking, like maybe it's just that tweak of like, making it easier to talk to engineers and or like make it so that, you know, the engineers don't have to join the ticket thing, but there's a way that they can read the stuff and they get all the information and it has a sort of a workflow built into that type of thing, right? That is probably the way they operate. And also has, you know, what version of the product, like all those other things, like they put in a serial number, it can query these typical like manufacturing databases that have serial numbers. I don't know. I'm just making stuff up. But but that sounds like, well, one, you know people, you have a background and expertise. Like you have at least maybe you could formulate a point of view around how this software should operate, even if it was just to make it like a this software is built for me, right? Versus this is meant for me, but not actually custom built for me.
Yeah. Huh. That opens a whole
new can of worms. And they're not on
LinkedIn. They're not on LinkedIn.
So stop pecking in LinkedIn trying to just get people to talk to you.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the thing, though, like, especially with trade shows, like when you're in person, it's a lot easier to talk to people and build a connection and that sort of thing. And to, like, you know, after a day of that, you kind of know pretty quick where things are at, I think, too.
Sorry, camera was out of focus and I just got distracted by it. But yeah, so whether it's trade shows or like, you know, some of these people or mm-hmm. know some people that have at least in that manufacturing industry. So even if you cold outreach to some of these other ones, you're like, hey, I built, you know, like I built for these other companies, right? So just even that is a door mm-hmm. opener of like association, because I'm sure anyone else that is hitting them up for something mm-hmm. does not have that same level right. of credentials, and you are someone to trust in that space just because of you can talk with strong authority, not necessarily being like you have to get a referral from that person, but oh yeah, you're a competitor of so-and-so, and I'm not trying to give competitive advantages or anything like that, but at the same time, do you have these problems? Like, and I'm looking to build software so companies like you don't have to do custom anymore or use crappy Zendesk that wasn't built for you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really helpful. I have lots to think about now. Yeah. Go in my corner and process for a little while.
That's what I'm here for, just to spin you in other directions. It's like a Nate hitting a pinata. I just put a blindfold and I get to spin you and then just send you off.
I find it very helpful, so I really appreciate it.
Cool. All right. Well, what else do we have today?
I think you have new glasses. Do you have new glasses?
I do. I have a lot of new glasses. Well, anyway, I got a new prescription and then I ordered them from this place that's pretty called Zenni. It's just, I don't know, the classical, like getting glasses at the obstetrician or whatever. And it's like, you know, $300 for glasses. I've hated that. So
yes.
I just get my prescription and I go online and order. And sometimes, you know, you might try the virtual try-on thing and then you sort of like, and I might, because it's like, you know, $20, $30 a pair, I might order like three different pairs.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is one, it's a new prescription. Things are a lot clearer. Here's another one that my family hated because they didn't like this.
Oh, the side piece
thing. Yeah. And they didn't like these little things, but. And here was my old pair, right? They all had the same general, like, rectangular sort of.
Yeah. For the listeners who can't see, Josh is trying on various glasses that look somewhat the same but are different colors.
Yeah, you know, little stylistic changes. Who knows, you know, just spice of life.
Oh, fun. Yes, I did it. All right. Well,
all right.
Good talking to you, Josh. We'll see you around.
All right. Thanks, Nate. Talk to you later.
Yeah. Bye. Hey, thanks for joining us today. If you want to chat with us, we're on Twitter. I'm at Nate Bosher and Josh is at JLogic. If you're a new listener, check out some of our most popular episodes. Episode 52, 7 years to 22 MRR and zombie startups. Or episode 30, review sites are a necessary evil and hacks to get around them. Thanks again.